This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. The Associated Press says Donald Trump has now reached the number of delegates he needs to clinch the GOP nomination, so it's most likely that Trump and Hillary Clinton will be facing off in November. But Bernie Sanders insists he's hanging in there until the Democratic National Convention. In the meantime, many Republicans are still hoping an alternative to Donald Trump will surface. Political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson join us this afternoon with the latest news on the presidential race. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ken, Howard, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Ken, what's the trivia question for today?
Trivia question is, okay, excluding Hillary Clinton, okay, excluding Hillary Clinton, who was the last Secretary of State who ran for president after serving in the State Department?
Okay. Huh. Last Secretary of State who ran for president after serving, after is the key thing here, after serving in the State Department, and that's excluding Hillary. So the first right answer, if you think you know the answer, give us a call, 513-419-7100. The first correct answer by phone, no emailed answers, please. That first correct answer by phone will win a political junkie button, 513-419-7100. And, you know, Ken, it's interesting. Late this morning, just before we went on here, we had the Associated Press do a count of delegates and announce that Donald Trump has reached the number of delegates that he needed to clinch the GOP nomination. He's at 1,238, and he needed 1,237. So for those of us who said this would not happen, it has.
Well, yeah, I mean, we kind of knew since Indiana that it was going to happen. I mean, that was Ted Cruz's last stand. He had that pact with John Kasich. He picked Carly Fiorina as his running mate. He was ready to put it all on the line in Indiana, and then that didn't happen. So even though we've known for almost a month now that Indiana made Donald Trump the presumptive nominee, just hearing you say it, Mark, just hearing it, that Donald Trump has the delegates, enough delegates, it's just startling. I mean, you know, of course, we've always said how wrong we've been about Donald Trump from the beginning, how it's just a carnival act, that once the voters pay attention, this would never happen. And yet, the more we said it, the more popular he got. And right now, not only in addition to him being the presumptive Republican nominee, but the last polls have him within 2 or 3 points of Hillary Clinton. And I think the ABC Washington Post poll had him up by 2. Now, polls in May don't mean everything, but still, it's just remarkable watching the beginning and where we are now with Donald Trump.
Yeah, you could not have, like last summer, for example, have even imagined this in your wildest dreams, that Donald Trump would be the Republican Party's nominee for presidency of the United States. I mean, it is astounding. And it's going to take a whole lot of analysis to figure out why that happened. I mean, I have ideas on why it happened. I know Ken does. But it is a phenomenon unlike anything else that I can think of in modern American history.
You know, when this happens, when somebody wins the nomination, you always say, well, he or she won the nomination because he did everything right. I'll make the case that Donald Trump did everything wrong.
Yeah, he did everything.
He crossed lines that he had no business crossing.
Didn't spend that much money.
He didn't spend money. He didn't have to because the networks paid for everything.
Sure.
He switched policies on everything. He was not consistent. He alienated Republicans. He alienated conservatives. And yet, he won, or he's the guy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, once upon a time, we were talking about how this Republican field in 2016 was the strongest ever. You had Jeb Bush and Scott Walker and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and, don't forget George Pataki. But you have all these people who were thought to be strong candidates, and one by one, he just, knocked them out of the race.
And, Ken, I think that's the thing that I find most amazing is that, like you're noting there, he was going up against, 16 other candidates at one point?
Yeah.
And like you're saying, a lot of them are veterans, they're seasoned politicians, and he's the political newcomer, yet he pulls this off.
They were veteran, seasoned politicians, but they all kind of blended into one. I mean, there weren't, nobody ever stood out the way that this guy did. And Ken's right. part of this is a big, very big part of this is the national news media and the attention that they heaped upon him. I mean, that he could get airtime anytime he wanted. He got more attention, you know, than any presidential candidate in history, I think.
Right, and not only did he get that attention, you know, we've talked about this before, when you appear on Meet the Press or Face the Nation, usually you show up.
Right.
You don't do it by phone, and they were taking him by phone. They were taking him any way they could because they could not get enough of him.
I mean, well, you know, there's the old saying, you know, well, he phoned it in. Well, he did.
Yeah.
Ken, would you go ahead and give us the trivia question again, and let's see if we can get some more callers on the line for this.
Okay, not including Hillary Clinton, who was the last Secretary of State who ran for president after serving in the State Department?
Okay, yeah, if you think you know the answer
for
to that.
Clarification?
Yeah. Yeah. Is that allowed, Ken?
Sure, we can ask that for
ran or was nominated?
Ran for president.
Okay.
Okay. If you think you know the answer, 513-419-7100. And again, phone calls only, please, for the trivia question. You know, and Howard was saying that he's not seen anything quite like this in all his time of covering politics. I'm curious, Ken, in all the years you've covered it, have you ever seen anything like what's going on this year?
Well, I mean, Howard's twice my age, but even so, I mean, look, no, never, never. And, you know, you always talk about how in the past, if somebody, if a candidate made a gaffe or an embarrassment or even a slur, the media would rip him or her to shreds, right. And that would be the last we'd ever see him. Think of Herman Cain, for example. And yet, you know, I mean, Donald Trump would say either infuriating or incendiary things or insult other Republicans or say things that are so anathema to Republicans as far as ideology goes, and yet his, you know, the famous quote of Donald Trump that I can shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and my supporters will, you know, will increase,
right.
And there was truth to that.
And the other thing that amazes me too, Ken, is that we've had all this news on the Democratic side. I mean, we've got Bernie Sanders; he's still hanging in there. We've had the email investigation heat up. It's been a tough week for Hillary Clinton. Yet Trump is still the dominant story in the news.
Right. Isn't it funny that all the time we talked about a contested convention, we were always talking about Republicans, never thinking that it was the Democrats.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you would like to join the conversation. And
one thing that's interesting is, you know, you still have this kind of resistance. Like Kasich has told, you know, sent letters to all his delegates saying, you know, please, you are still bound to me. And he has done nothing, and he has said nothing that would indicate that, you know, he's going to go out and try to help elect this nominee of his party, especially, you know, in Ohio, which is obviously a very important state.
You know, I mean, of course, this is still early May, or it's not early May anymore, it's late May, we still have 2 months to go before the convention, but I agree with you. Same with Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio has not released his delegates. As a matter of fact, he has more delegates than John Kasich, even though he dropped out of the race 12 years ago. but I mean, it's clear that while there are more rank and file and more members of Congress who have rallied around Donald Trump saying, look, we've got to beat Hillary Clinton, and there's no two ways about it, there are a significant number of Republicans, including Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, who said, I'm just not ready to make that move yet. I'm not comfortable with him.
Yeah, the Paul Ryan thing is really interesting because, you know, I mean, he has an agenda for the next Congress, which he hopes will be, you know, a Republican Congress. And it doesn't fit hand in glove with the kind of things that Donald Trump has been talking about on issues, you know, like trade. I mean, you know,
taxes,
they're miles apart.
Not only that, I think there are two agendas that that Paul Ryan may have, not only to make sure a Republican Congress is reelected so he stays as Speaker, but he may very well be looking at 2020.
Oh, yes.
And can he go into 2020 hoping for the nomination and dissing the Republican nominee in 2016? That's part of his calculation.
Well, I think that's part of his calculations. I think it's also part of Kasich's calculations. I think it's part of Marco Rubio's calculations. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's out there.
Speaking of dissing people, I mean, what did you make of Trump going after New Mexico governor and fellow Republican Susana Martinez about the way she's handling her state's economy? I guess
Isn't that great? Let's see. Donald Trump has problems with women and Latinos. So let me see. Let me insult a female Latino, a Latino governor, a Republican governor of New Mexico. What did he get out of that? What did he gain out of that?
I have no idea. And he started this week kind of insulting people again. You know, Martinez is the big example, but Nikki Haley. Then he starts going after Mitt Romney. And starts talking about, you know, he walks like a penguin. I don't know what.
Yeah, I guess he walks like a penguin. I guess this is Trump's way of telling all these folks that they're not on his VP list. Is
apparently
that what he's doing?
Well, you know something? If you insult or you demean or you look at Donald Trump cross-eyed, he will come back to you 10 times worse than anything you've ever done to him.
Yes.
Hey, we have some folks lined up to try the trivia question, so let's see if we can get an answer here. And let's start with Dan in Pleasant Ridge. Hi, Dan. Who do you think it was?
Hello.
What's your answer?
James. I mean, it says candidate or nominee?
Candidate.
George Mitchell.
I'm sorry?
George Mitchell.
Well, George Mitchell was never Secretary of State, and he never ran for president. So besides those two things, now George Mitchell was the former senator from Maine, the Senate Majority Leader, but never ran for president and was never Secretary of State.
UN, the job at the UN, too.
It's a better guess than I would have made. So let's talk with Sandy and Marymont. Hi, Sandy. Hello, Sandy.
Yes.
What do you think the answer is?
Well, I think I got the wrong department, but I guess George H. Bush.
Well, George H.W. Bush was a lot of things. He was the U.N. ambassador. He was the head of the RNC. He was the head of the CIA, but not Secretary of State. And so that doesn't work for George H.W. Bush.
Okay, let's see. David in Lawrenceburg. Who do you think it was, David?
Hi. I thought it was someone else, but I've changed my mind to Alexander Haig.
Well, you made the right decision by changing your mind. It was Alexander Haig.
There we go. Very good. Excellent.
He was Ronald Reagan's first Secretary of State, and then of course, in 1988, he ran for the Republican nomination, spending most of his time attacking Vice President George Bush on Iran-Contra and didn't get anywhere. But since we have an answer, Mark, do I have your permission to continue my thought?
Yeah, and David, hang on the line so we can get your information on where to send your prize to. So stay on the line there. And you want to do another one?
We get more to that?
Yeah.
We have more. Well, I have another one. So now, excluding Hillary Clinton, because she also ran for president before she was Secretary of State for the first time, and excluding John Kerry, who was the last person, Secretary of State, to run for president before becoming Secretary of State?
Okay, so now it's reversed. It's a before as opposed to an after. All right. Well, if you think you know the answer to that, give us a call at 513-419-7100. We will continue our political conversation after this. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, along with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken, go ahead. Before we went to break, you gave out a second trivia question. Go ahead and shoot that by us again.
Second question, not including Hillary Clinton or John Kerry, who's the last person who, Secretary of State, who ran for president before becoming Secretary of State? Yeah, you know, Mark, we talk about that, you know, the winner gets the political junkie button. I saw this very disturbing photo on the WVXU homepage yes. of Aaron Beck. the WVXU membership manager.
Yes, Aaron. Yeah.
Covered with buttons. What is going on with Cincinnati?
We love you, Ken.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, just.
Well, and Aaron's a great lady too. Yeah, yeah, and you got fans. So and
she said she'll never take off that shirt again, which is maybe she can't. Maybe somebody wrote in and said maybe because the pins were stuck to her skin, maybe she can't take it off. But
I wanted to get your take on this too, as we're talking about Donald Trump. I mean, one of the big obstacles that he's going to have to work on is unifying the party and getting people to coalesce around him. But I think the other thing that I keep wondering about, and I wonder what your thoughts are on this, Ken, he's getting a late start on this. How much of a challenge? He's talked about, I'm going to fund my own campaign, but he's going to have to go out and do some fundraising now. And how difficult is that going to be for him?
Well, you know something, that's a very good question. And here's the thing. He said all along that I don't need any of these big money guys because they control politicians and that's not my style. I will self-fund my, remember Mitt Romney's self-deportation? Yeah. Well, Donald Trump's equally inconceivable. He would self-fund his own campaign. And now, of course, by not releasing his tax returns because of a so-called audit, you know, who knows what money he really has, you know, maybe. You know, when there were so many questions about hiding his real worth and the income tax returns. And now he's saying, I've got to go to these donors and, you know, get funds quickly because Hillary Clinton is clearly on her way to a $1 billion campaign. And there was a great story in the New York Times last weekend that there are a lot of Republican donors who are just saying, not doing it. He's either a phony, a charlatan. He's not a conservative, or he's just mean. And they want no part of him.
Yeah, I mean, those are the type of people who are going to end up giving their money to Senate candidates and try to keep control of the Senate and let Donald Trump say, okay, you know, Mr. Big Shot, if you can self-fund, go ahead and do it.
The Koch brothers are a good example. Charles Koch makes it clear, or David Koch makes it clear that he is not a fan of Donald Trump at all. But, of course, you know that they will put in tons of money to defeat Hillary Clinton, maybe not in favor of Donald Trump, and certainly to retain control of the House and Senate.
Yeah, they're already spending enormous amounts of money on the Senate races.
Yeah.
I keep wondering, though, because of what we've been talking about, excuse me, the fact that Trump is such a master at getting attention from the media and getting publicity. So in my mind, I'm just sitting here wondering, how much does he really need to raise? He's done so many unexpected things and been so non-traditional and so many other ways. He's going to need to raise near as much as somebody else would with all the attention he gets.
You know something I think you do? A good example is look at what the different ways the money was spent in 2012. Mitt Romney spent, of course, just about as much as Barack Obama, but he spent it mostly on TV ads that has a limited effect, whereas Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012 had a lot of troops on the ground, a lot of workers, you know, working in the precincts around the country. There was no evidence that there's a Trump organization at this point ready to do that, and you know, in an election that seems like it could be very close if you buy the current polls, and it could very well be close, not having those troops on the ground, not having that kind of organization could be deadly.
Yeah, I mean, we're past the point where you can just get by on free media. You know, it's like Ken says, I mean, you have to have organization, ground organization. Obama had probably the best that ever existed in organizing for America, you know, just putting people out, grassroots campaigning. And it costs money. It costs a lot of money. And it's going to cost a whole lot of money to win this election. He's entered a new phase of this contest. This is no longer about winning a Republican nomination. This is about expanding out beyond, you know, the Trump people and trying to bring in other voters.
And you know something, you mentioned the kind of free media that Trump has been getting. Well, I wonder if it's going to be as softball. I mean, it's not always been softball, but I was watching Jake Tapper. I was watching Jake Tapper on CNN the other day, and he was going on and on how despicable and how dishonest Trump is regarding the Vince Foster conspiracy theories. And I'm just wondering if now, suddenly, I mean, now that he's gotten the nomination, I wonder if everybody other than Hannity, Joe Scarborough, and Fox and Friends, I wonder if everybody's going to start to treat Donald Trump and just start to critique what he has to say more definitively and more broadly than they have in the past.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think, you know, now he's going to get a lot more scrutiny, and it's going to be a lot more harsh than it ever has been up to this point. And that goes for, you know, both candidates, really.
Greg in Sycamore Township joins us now, and Greg has a question. Hi, Greg.
Hey. I always enjoy the show here. It's just a general comment I want to make, and it gets mentioned periodically, but I think it's really something that ought to be mentioned more frequently, and that's just simply the voter participation. And I know sometimes people mention the eligible voters and then the registered voters, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's a pretty low percentage of people who actually vote in the caucuses, primaries, and just elections in general, and I just thought that might be an important fact to bring out in all these political discussions.
Yeah, I it's true. I believe in a lot of primary elections. You know, obviously in presidential years, it bumps up quite a bit, you know, just because there's so much attention paid, particularly in, you know, certain states. But the presidential election, I think this year, I think it's going to have a pretty huge turnout because there are going to be a whole lot of people who are motivated to go out and vote. And they may not be motivated to go out and vote for somebody so much as they are motivated to go out and vote against somebody that they don't like.
Howard, that's an important point. If you looked at the latest poll, I think it was an NBC Wall Street Journal poll that showed both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump with disfavorables far higher than their favorables. I think Hillary was 53% unfavorable and Trump was 55 or 56% unfavorable. So either people sit home or because they're so disgusted, or they're so angry at Trump that they vote for Hillary, or they're so angry at Clinton they vote for Donald. I mean, it could be, as you say, it could be as much as voting against someone as it is for someone.
I can see that happening. I mean, essentially, you know, from the, you know, like the numbers that you're talking about in that poll, you've essentially got the second most disliked political figure in the country running against the most disliked political figure,
and with margin of error, they might be equally disliked.
Well, yeah, they could be. You know, the other question is the Bernie Sanders people, the people that are supporting Bernie Sanders. Are they going to go vote? Are they going to vote for Hillary? Is that being reflected in the polling now?
The last poll I saw showed that only 66% of Sanders supporters expect to support Hillary Clinton if she were the nominee, whereas Hillary supporters, I think it's like 84, 88%, they would vote for Sanders if she were the nominee. 66% is not a large number.
That's
but again,
good.
The battle is still going on. Bernie Sanders is still in the race. There's still a little bad blood. You saw when Hillary Clinton said, no way, I'm going to debate Bernie Sanders before California. You saw Bernie Sanders getting really petulant and really angry, and his supporters obviously pick up that cue. So right now, there's still a lot of bad blood, bad feelings. Let's talk as we get closer and closer to Philadelphia and see where we go.
There's plenty of time for everybody to kiss and make up in that party, but they do like a fight.
So Ken, help me figure out what Bernie Sanders, what is motivating him? Why is he staying in this race?
I remember we always used to ask that question in 1988. What does Jesse want? You know, what does Jesse Jackson really want? What Bernie Sanders wants, I mean, of course he wants to be the nominee. He probably knows he's not going to be the nominee. I think Hillary Clinton, including the superdelegates, probably needs only like 58 or so delegates to become the nominee. But what he wants is he wants a change in the party rules. He doesn't want the superdelegates to have this outsized role that they have now. He wants more states with primaries to allow independents to vote. If you notice that when Bernie Sanders wins or does the best, it's in states where the independents can vote. If it's Democrats only, if it's a closed primary, Hillary Clinton always wins. So he wants more outsiders, and what we want is the Democratic Party to open up and allow more Democrats, I mean, and more voters and more independents. And on the platform itself, I mean, he's still not in line with Hillary Clinton about minimum wage. He wants a $15 federal minimum wage. He's against fracking. He's against the trade deals. And while Hillary Clinton keeps getting pulled further and further to the left, that doesn't mean that Bernie Sanders' demands or requests have stopped. So he has a lot of things he wants to accomplish. And of course, he keeps pointing out that he keeps naming some of his own delegates or suggesting his own delegates for the rules and credentials and platform committees. Yeah. And he's getting rejected by Debbie Wasserman Schultz. So just last week or so, he said, I've endorsed Debbie Wasserman Schultz's opponent in the Democratic primary. I mean, Bernie Sanders does not like sound like he's getting mollified anytime soon.
No. And I also think in the back of his mind, or maybe not in the back of his mind, maybe in the front of his mind, is that, you know, he's going to go back to the Senate more than likely, and he could possibly go back to the Senate as a member of the majority, and he could have quite a bit more clout than he ever had before, because he's demonstrated that there are millions of Americans who back him and believe in the same things that he does.
Although he never really had great clout in the Senate,
no.
First of all, he's not a Democrat. He's an independent.
Right.
He loves to rib and get on the case of the Democrats and President Obama as much as the Republicans. And he's a loner. The fact is only one senator, Jeff Merkley of Oregon, is the only one who's endorsed him, which lets you know that he likes to play by his own tune. And you know, I mean, I think a lot of his supporters like him because he's not beholden to the big parties and the big corporate interests, but at the same time, you know, he doesn't get that much done in the Senate because of the views he takes.
Okay, it's a double junkie political jeopardy, double political junkie jeopardy day, and we've got some more people lined up to try to answer the question that you threw out there earlier, Ken. So let's see if Joe in Covington knows the right answer. Hi, Joe.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. William Jennings Bryan.
Was William Jennings Bryan Secretary of State? Was he Grover Cleveland Secretary of State?
Well, yeah, anyway, he was Secretary of State. Yeah,
well, really. Then that would be a good answer, but he would not be the last one.
Okay,
let's see what Yolanda...
We want somebody who ran for president before becoming Secretary of State, and that was not William Jennings Bryan.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see if Yolanda and Coleraine knows the answer to this. Yolanda?
Is it Colin Powell?
Colin Powell's a good guess, but he never ran for president, even though a lot of people wanted him to. He never ran.
Okay, Jared in Union Township. Jared, who do you think it was?
Warren Christopher.
Warren Christopher, also Secretary of State, but never ran for president.
Okay, let's give Ray in Finneytown a shot at this. Ray, who do you think it was?
Yeah, I got to go way back for this one. I'm going to say Henry Clay.
Well, Henry Clay, of course, you know, changed his name to Henry Ali, but I've been using that joke for 40 years, but answer much more reasonable.
Still doesn't work. Listeners will enjoy that.
Yeah, it still doesn't work, though, Ken, after 40 years.
I know, I realize that. But anyway, much more recent than Henry Clay.
Okay, let's see, James in Hillsborough, who do you think it was?
Wow, your clue to that last caller kind of negates my... Wasn't Seward a presidential candidate before he became Abraham Lincoln's Secretary of State?
It was not Seward, no. But, you know, his slogan was, there's no place like Nome. How's that, Mark? Was that a funny joke? Mark!
That's much better. Very
Mark,
good.
That was a lot better.
Your demands on funny jokes are getting overwhelming.
That was good.
Okay. Moving right along here. Tom in Northside. Tom, who do you think it was?
How about Edmund Muskie?
Edmund Muskie is the correct answer.
Hey, there we go. Yeah.
Good job, Tom.
Okay.
Muskie,
way
of course,
to go.
Muskie, of course, was Jimmy Carter's Secretary of State, and he became it after what's-his-name quit over the hostages. Remember the aborted release? What was his name? But anyway, Muskie was picked Secretary of State for Jimmy Carter after the original Secretary of State quit after that abortive raid to free the hostages. And, of course, Muskie ran for president in 1972. He was the front-runner, but George McGovern outsmarted him.
So, Tom, congratulations. Stay on the line there, and we'll get your address on where to send your prize to. Thanks very much, Tom.
Thanks.
And 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the political conversation with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ken, you know, we keep hearing all this talk about how the GOP is in disarray. But I have to wonder, with Bernie Sanders refusing to budge, as we've been talking about, how much turmoil is this going to create for the Democrats as they head into their national convention?
Well, we saw something that, of course, there's a lot of conflicting reports about what actually happened, but there was a Nevada State Convention a couple of weekends ago where Bernie Sanders supporters expected to come out with more national delegates than they did. And what happened was that Hillary Clinton won the precinct caucuses. Bernie Sanders supporters surprised them at the county conventions, and then Hillary Clinton surprised them at the state convention, and Sanders came away with fewer delegates. And there was a lot of anger. Of course, there were a lot of reports about throwing chairs being thrown, although there's no evidence of that, although that seems to be what the New York Times and a lot of other people were talking about,
right,
that people were throwing chairs. Yeah. And
right, whether that's completely accurate, I think most would agree that it was a contentious gathering.
Yeah. It was, and there were threats made against the female chair of the Nevada Democratic Party, and of course, she's blaming it. A lot of people are blaming it on the Sanders people, so the emotions are still raw, and it sounds like, you know, right now it doesn't sound like they're going to be best of friends, but, you know, we were talking right before the show about comparing 2016 to 1968.
Yeah.
And one way you could compare it in some ways is that there are a lot of Eugene McCarthy supporters who refuse to back Hubert Humphrey until the very late in the process because they don't like the way they didn't like the Lyndon Johnson's war. They didn't like the fact that Hubert Humphrey won the nomination without having competed in a single primary. But McCarthy came on board late in the process, and his supporters came along as well. Perhaps if they came along earlier, he could have beaten Richard Nixon. But right now, I mean, with Hillary Clinton, what's killing Hillary Clinton right now, of course, is that she's dying to take on Donald Trump nonstop. But she still has to watch, you know, what Bernie Sanders has to say. She still has to campaign in states she'd rather not need to campaign in, like Kentucky. She didn't want to do that, but she needed to do it. And she has to worry about, you know, trying to make sure they're welcome. She's very you know, careful the way she treats Bernie Sanders and not to offend him or his supporters.
We will continue our political conversation after this. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson join me this afternoon, and you can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. It's been a tough week for Hillary Clinton. I mean, you had the State Department's Inspector General reporting on her use of a personal email server, saying she violated the Federal Records Act. And as I understand it, the IG report doesn't have any legal consequences, but the FBI is still investigating, and that certainly could have legal consequences. So I wonder where both of you think this is heading and what effect this is going to have on her campaign.
Well, you know, when I posted the IG report yesterday on Facebook, I got a lot of responses from people who said that this is just, you know, Vince Foster theories thrown all over again. This is just nonsense. It's just made up stuff. It's pointless and it's not important. And she didn't break any laws. Well, nobody's accusing her of breaking any laws, but she did do a lot of things wrong. And the fact that, and everybody says, well, Colin Powell did it too, and Madeleine Albright did it too. And let me just say that, well, they all cooperated with the Inspector General's investigation. Hillary Clinton nor any of her aides, they all refused to cooperate and testify. So, you know, so maybe it's no big deal. Maybe it's the right-wing conspiracy and the media trying to bring down Hillary Clinton. I mean, I don't know if that's true or not. I don't think it's true at all. But the fact is they did not cooperate at all. And why?
Yeah, that is a very good question. And it gives Donald Trump, you know, just more reason to keep calling her crooked to Hillary Clinton every opportunity he gets. And you know, this thing is going to be played out in umpteen million TV and web ads for, you know, the next 5 months.
And another question is, why couldn't Ken Rudin remember that it was Cyrus Vance who was the Secretary
yeah,
of State
that's
who resigned?
It. You're right.
Now it comes to you.
Yeah.
Of course. Hey, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ken, too, but something, when they're pointing out, saying that Colin Powell and Madeleine Albright, they did the same thing.
Yeah.
Is it, correct me if I'm wrong, but weren't the email standards still evolving during
their terms? They were different.
And again, we're not saying that she broke the law. She had malicious intent, but she did get a warning. There are a lot of people who said that she needed to ask for permission. She did not do that. And again, of course, if you're a conspiracy theorist and you think, what does she have to hide? And we're going back to that again with, sounds like, you know, Whitewater and all that stuff all over again. But the point is, they refused to cooperate. And to me, that's, you know, I mean, not that everybody who pleads the Fifth Amendment is guilty, but sometimes, and they say, well, you know, they're in the middle of a presidential campaign. Who has time to do that? That doesn't fly with me. But again, when I started to say that, I mean, I got outvoted and hooted down on Facebook saying that, you know, you guys are falling for all these, you know, these fake stories that are really just out to get Hillary Clinton.
Well, yeah, you were hooted down on Facebook. But, you know, you're right. I mean, these questions are still going to be raised.
There's still the ongoing FBI investigation.
From now till election day.
But still, for Donald Trump to be the guy who's the purveyor of
being
truth
the
purveyor of accuracy. I mean, my goodness.
yeah.
I mean, just
I know. Well, it's
These are indeed strange times.
They are.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation, and let's talk with Nancy in Norwood. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good.
I have a question. Do your experts think that a lot of people will stay away, Republicans in particular, will stay away from the polls because they find Trump obnoxious and just crazy, and therefore the rest of the ticket will be hurt?
Well, I can tell you that there are people in the Republican Party, you know, at local and state level, not just here, but in many parts of the country, who are afraid of exactly that happening, that if Donald Trump is not successful, if he can't get Republicans, mainstream-type Republicans, to vote for him, that it's going to hurt the down-ticket races, and you're going to have, you know, a complete Republican route this year. But it's hard to say what those people are going to do. You know, are they going to hold their nose and vote for Donald Trump? It's hard to imagine them coming out and voting for Hillary Clinton. There are very few alternatives out there that are credible.
Yeah, Nancy Ann makes a very, very important point because, as we said earlier, the need to keep the House and Senate in Republicans' hands, especially if it's Hillary Clinton, and if it's Hillary Clinton who's president, then you know that Merrick Garland, the Supreme Court choice, would have been the greatest choice for the Republicans to accept because, you know, Hillary will not be looking for a centrist on the court. So, but at the same time, there really is deep dislike. I mean, as much as they want to beat Hillary Clinton, they just don't like, there are so many of them who don't like Donald Trump. And of course, that number is shrinking somewhat. He is getting more of a Republican vote in the polls. I think it was like 88-12, which is very good, considering how many Republicans despised him earlier in the contest. So we still have a long way to go. We still have running mates. We have conventions. We have debates. We have, you know, I mean, as we talked about the fact that he's still, Donald Trump is still attacking fellow Republicans, as we saw in New Mexico. that could make it just harder and harder. I spoke to a leading Republican about a month or two ago who said that he would rather lose. He'd rather have Hillary Clinton win, and then the Republican Party will stay as strong as it did, you know, in the opposition. But if Trump wins, then he feels that the Republican Party could take a beating in the midterm elections, battles with Congress. So he thinks there are some Republicans who think that it might even be better for the party if Donald Trump loses, Hillary Clinton wins.
Yeah, I've heard the same kind of thing from Republicans, too.
We probably spoke to the same guy.
Probably.
Speaking of Senate races, Troy and Taylor Mill joins us now. Hi, Troy.
Hello. Hey, guys. You were talking about all that big money maybe not going to Donald Trump. And here in Kentucky, we got Jim Gray, the Democrat, running against Rand Paul. And I was wondering what your thoughts are about Jim Gray possibly beating Rand Paul and some of that money coming here to help Rand Paul keep his position.
Well, if there's anything Mitch McConnell wants, it's not so much Donald Trump. He wants to be majority leader. He spent his whole career wanting to be majority leader.
Right.
And you know something, for all the, even though when Rand Paul first ran for the Senate in 2010 and Mitch McConnell was backing somebody else in the primary, they have worked together very well over the last 6 years. When McConnell was seemingly in trouble with a Tea Party challenge 2 years ago, Rand Paul was right by his side. I suspect that there'll be no shortage of money for Rand Paul in Kentucky. Although I did read somewhere that Rand Paul is not happy in the Senate. He's kind of like his head is down. He's kind of shuffling along, and he's not, you know, not Mr. Happy. But as far as Mitch McConnell goes, he knows that, you know, the Democrats only need 4 or 5 seats to retake the Senate, and he's going to do whatever he can to make sure that Rand Paul is reelected.
I absolutely agree. I mean, Mitch McConnell is going to go into Kentucky just the way he's going to go into Ohio and spend enormous amounts of money to reelect a Republican incumbent. I mean, you know, he has to in order to save this fragile majority that he has.
And then on our side of the river, Howard, we've got Rob Portman, who is going up against Ted Strickland. And so what is the impact on his race?
Well, it's difficult for Rob Portman. I mean, Rob Portman is in a situation where he is in a very difficult race against Ted Strickland, the former governor. The polling has them basically dead even at this point. The polling also shows, and this is kind of astounding for a United States senator and a guy who has, you know, had high-profile jobs in the Bush administration and served in the House for quite a long time. Over 40% of Ohioans are telling, like the Quinnipiac poll, that they don't know enough about Rob Portman to form an opinion on him. So he's got a problem, you know, back home trying to define himself. And then he has, on the other hand, you know, the Trump machine keeps pumping out these little hints that, oh, yeah, Rob Portman would make a nice running mate, you know, and he's going, no, oh, no, I'm not interested in that job. I'm, you know, although he could conceivably run for vice president and for reelection to the Senate at the same time under Ohio law. If he did that, he'd almost certainly lose the Senate seat.
Yeah, I can't imagine Rob Portman being picked over Kasich.
Not
over John
happen.
Kasich.
Right.
But one number you're not including, Howard, is the fact that money, and Rob Portman has tons of more money than Ted Strickland, who's having trouble somehow for some reason raising money. And he's also, Ted Strickland is, I think, 71 years old or maybe even older, and I think he would be, in memory, the oldest first-term freshman senator, if he's elected in a long time.
Yeah, he's 74, actually.
I'm not pulling the age thing, but it's interesting. I think Portman is in better shape than the polls indicate.
Yeah, he's going to have much more money, and the Democrats know that. I mean, they know they're going to get outspent by this, you know, enormous amount of money. And, you know, they're trying their very best, you know, with their ground organization, with organized labor, with, you know, all of their constituency groups to do the grassroots work, because they're not going to be able to match him dollar for dollar in TV advertising or anything else.
And again, I know we have 5 months to go for the election, but what also interested me, it was a Quinnipiac poll, but other polls as well, that showed Ohio very close, that Donald Trump's weaknesses may be in states like Arizona and Georgia because of a strong Latino population and African-American population, but in the industrial Midwest with the fear about losing jobs, that he is running stronger in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin than certainly Romney or McCain did. And again, you know, I mean, I don't know what these polls mean in late May, but it's something to watch. I'm sure the Democrats are watching it as well.
Well, in Ohio, one of the ironies is, I mean, I think he's appealing to many of the same voters who are Ted Strickland's supporters. You know, they're blue collar, they're from smokestack industries that they've seen gone away. They're, you know, from poor areas of the state.
And who knows? I mean, you know, stranger things have happened, but he could very well try to appeal to disgruntled Bernie Sanders supporters. I mean, it sounds ludicrous, but not really. I mean, I still remember the story in 1968 that there were quite a few Bobby Kennedy supporters who wound up voting for George Wallace in the end because just with such a dissatisfaction with the way things are going, and that sounds so hard to believe, but I wonder if some Sanders supporters may still be so resentful of either Hillary Clinton or just not happy with the Democratic Party and the way Sanders says he was treated to either, you know, to possibly vote Republican. That's something to watch.
Right. Let's talk with Matthew in Loveland. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, this is Matt. Hey, I just love you, Howard. Thank you for all you do.
Well, thank you.
Just interested, you know, it seems to me like there is a growing wave of support for Trump, and all the polls suggest as such. And with everything going on right now with Hillary, you know, It seems to me, as a voter who is a centrist and a professional, that it makes it tough. It makes it tough to decide who to go for. And right now, I'm leaning towards Trump.
Yeah.
And I would like to get your input on what these recent events, as it relates to, you know, the emails, scandal, these types of things, has to do with what's going on.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't give too much credence to what the polls are saying right now. We're 5 months out. A lot of things are going to happen. The conventions are going to happen. The running mates are going to be chosen. We're going to have a series of debates starting in September, which to me, and I think you would agree with us, I think that's going to have an enormous impact on this year.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I mean, even though he says he loves you, he didn't say he loved me, but I think he likes
no,
me.
No, he likes you, though.
But he loves but, you.
And, well, nobody said anything about me.
Yeah. Who?
Well, I'll make sure you, yeah.
I said, but you know something. But these are good questions. And he, you know, he says the caller says he's a centrist. But what's interesting about Trump is that he has so many. I mean, I don't like. Yes, he's conservative on some things, on immigration, and but he's talked about raising the minimum wage. He's talked about no foreign incursions. He's talking about. At one point with the immigration and the deportations and the and bombing the hell out of ISIS, using other words, you know, it'll get a right wing vote. But there are progressives and I mean, it's hard to see a progressive supporting Trump, but he has certain positions on some issues that are winning over populist, somewhat progressive voters who are just not happy with the way things are going now with 7 years of Obama.
He has those positions on those issues, but then he has the positions on some other issues, which are anathema to these people.
Right, right, right.
Thoughts on California for Bernie Sanders. Could he win, and what if he does?
Well, I mean, he still won't go over the top. I mean, it's, you know, not that Hillary Clinton had to win Kentucky, but it's a good thing she did but it almost reminds me of 2008. Well, in the end, I think Hillary Clinton won six out of the last primaries over Barack Obama in 2008, although California was not one of them because California was earlier in the process. But she won, you know, she had, and it was very close at the end. And at the end, when she was still, you know, a bunch of delegates short, she said, okay, I'm out of the race. I'm backing Barack Obama. Now, we assume that no matter what happens, even if Bernie Sanders does win California, and he could win South Dakota and Montana too. Boy, that would be a beaut, huh, Montana? Yeah, that's another joke, Mark, yeah, that you may I'll never use again. But I mean, yeah. and New Jersey.
He's laughing.
No, he's not. He's not laughing. You know.
Real quick, though, Ken, speaking of Kentucky and Hillary winning it, they did a re-canvas of that primary, and Ryland Bartlett from Kentucky Public Radio just reported that after the re-canvass, Hillary still won Kentucky, so no change in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what we haven't talked about really yet is third party. And of course, you know, we know that the third party, the Libertarians, are having their convention this weekend. It looks like the former governor of New Mexico, Gary Johnson, will be once again the nominee. But you always talk about people will start looking at third parties because they're dissatisfied with the voters. But you know something? Ultimately, they never really do vote for third party candidates.
No. Well, Ken and Howard, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Sure.
I love Howard.
I love you, Ken.
He didn't say anything about me.
Political junkie, we all love you.
Oh, okay. Political junkie Ken Rudin, WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier, the assistant producer, Belinda Kai. Dave Shermer was the technical director. I'm Mark Caney.